Emma and Tom Talk Teaching, a podcast about all things education, presented by Emma O'Duher and Tom Breeze. Episode 15, Making Powerful Connections in the Expressive Arts.
Welcome back, everyone, to Emma and Tom Talk Teaching. And if I sound like I've been giggling, it's because I have. I am surrounded in my happy place by student teachers on our Expressive Arts PGCE programmes here at Cardiff Met. And that doesn't mean that we've made a brand new PGCE in Expressive Arts, but it means that we've got students from the PGCE Secondary Drama, PG Secondary Music, and PGCE Secondary Art and Design programmes. So I'm going to let them introduce their lovely selves to you, and then we'll tell you why we've convened this lovely group of students to talk to you today. So I'm going to start on my far left. Go for it.
Hello, I'm Tiana Hancock. I'm doing the drama PGCE. Nice to meet you all.
Hi, I'm Chloe. I'm also doing the drama PGCE.
Hi, I'm April. I'm doing the music PGCE.
Hi, I'm Serena Hancock, and I'm doing the art and design PGCE.
And that's all of them, I think.
I was going to say, you probably reveal that you are also here.
Yes, I'm also here. And what we're going to do today, we talk a lot about Curriculum for Wales in the abstract, but we know we've got a lot of our listeners out there who are out in schools trying to make it work. And we're lucky because we get plenty of time with our student teachers to experiment and try things out and come up with ideas. And so we thought we'd come up with a sort of worked example that may or may not be useful for some of our colleagues out there in schools to get them started on their cross-disciplinary discussions.
Absolutely, because quite a lot of time has passed since we covered this topic on our podcast. We did quite a lot of episodes a few seasons back where we were presenting to you our research into cross-curricular pedagogies within the expressive arts, when we're trying to sort of make sense of how we might make meaningful connections between our arts disciplines. And now schools, secondary in particular in Wales, are implementing Curriculum for Wales. So at the moment, in this particular moment in time, we've got secondary schools that are rolling out Curriculum for Wales with Years 7 and Year 8. And so we've had student teachers on the ground, having just completed their first school placement, Clinical Practice 1, who've seen this going on in the field. And before we talk to you about what happened when we got them all back together in their sort of inter-placement fortnight to discuss what they found, we should probably just recap to those of you out there who don't know this, the sort of guidance that practitioners in schools have about how they might bring together the expressive arts disciplines in their locally relevant curricula. So I'm quoting now from the Curriculum for Wales. It says, there is flexibility in how a school may decide to structure its curriculum, such as through an integrated, multidisciplinary, interdisciplinary or disciplinary approach. So we recapped these to the students before we got you all back together, because we wanted to know from your perspective what you were seeing out there in the field. So disciplinary, this is where subjects aren't working together. They still sort of stand alone. It's sometimes referred to as subject-centred. We've got interdisciplinary, difficult word to say. This is where the interdisciplinary curriculum is organised around learning aspects in common within the disciplines, thereby emphasising the interdisciplinary skills between the subjects. So, for example, expressive arts disciplines might be organised to cut across subject matter lines at appropriate moments to encourage connections between skills, knowledge, concepts, maybe in a project. Then we've got multidisciplinary, and in that sort of design, the focus is on the discipline, but themes are used to connect between them. So for expressive arts disciplines might be taught separately, but they're working on a common theme. And then we've got the integrated approach, and I'm going to sort of own up here and say that I find this one the most problematic. So this is where the curriculum does away with the borders drawn around traditional subjects and relies on unifying concepts and holistic learning to connect diverse areas of study. So this is where the expressive arts disciplines are taught together at the same time, sometimes by the same practitioner. More commonly, I would imagine, seen in primary schools. So we got you all back together. We re-outlined those things, and I think probably what we should just ask first of all, straight off the bat, is what did you discover, having listened to one another about your different experiences of the expressive arts on your placements? What did you notice that was common about your experiences? What were the differences? What was surprising?
Can I start if that's okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
We are now into 3 weeks of CP2 as well, and already from 3 weeks there are vast differences from my CP1 and CP2. My CP1 school was only extracurricular when it came to expressive arts. It was called expressive arts, but it was very still like drama was one subject, music was another subject, art was another, and they didn't really collaborate unless it was extracurricular. So my CP1 school, they did a musical for their end of year production, and I was quite lucky to be there in October when that happened, when that was, you know, it's shown. And that's when I only saw them all come together as a core really, because art made the set, music direct, like music MD'd the show in the show, and drama then directed. But I just thought to myself that it would have been quite nice to see that relationship flourish throughout 7 and 8 as a whole, instead of just seeing it for this extracurricular show and then not acting like it didn't happen, but it was very much like, okay, that's done, we've done that bit. And they didn't really integrate it more. Whereas my CP2 school, they rely heavily on this expressive arts now. And I really enjoy seeing it in it. They have a theme each half term that they all adhere to. So at the moment in drama, we're doing littering and environment. And I know in art, they're doing the same, where they create pieces of art with, you know, pieces of litter. And then in drama, we're doing a TIE, teaching and theatre and education, sorry, production performance, where they end up creating like a show for six-year-olds where they kind of educate them on littering. There. Thank you.
Chloe.
Yeah, I found in my, like, my CP2 experience has been so far similar to what you explained your CP1 as. Like a lot of the combination of drama and art and music is a lot more with the extracurriculars and creating a show together, but not so much within the classroom. Where my CP1 was, there's a big performing arts courses you can take in my CP1. And so there's a lot more integration, but I found with both, like a similar thing with both, was that I found art to be like less present than in everything that they've done. So like music and drama were very together, or in the performing arts they also had dance as well, but then you didn't see really that art being included as something that they were doing, or like building the set or having it included wasn't really there. So I think that was like a similarity of something that's often missing with these things.
And then in my CP1, most of the kind of cross-curricular ALOE were our department meetings. So a lot of like staff were coming together and trying to figure out what it might look like. But I mean, meeting once or twice a week with drama and music and trying to see these teachers, trying to figure out how they're going to collaborate their subjects. The same way when we first were introduced to the AOLE, we were all a bit jarred because we're not specialists in the other areas. So I think teachers that are already in school are having this same problem, but I would say tenfold. Not to say like that they can't do it, but I feel like there's a lot of guidance. I think we need a top-down approach where we start with the staff and we start inviting music teachers and drama teachers to a session of art. And I'm trying to do that in my CP2. I'm trying to start some classes where we're going to invite more staff to art to give them some skills, tips and tricks, so that if you end up even at first covering an art lesson, because I covered a lesson with a drama teacher and she said, I can do the talking, you do the art, which is fair because my skill set is the practical element. But if I could give you all a taster to give you that confidence to teach my specialism, like that would be so delightful to see a drama teacher's approach to art or the music teacher's approach, because naturally you have different vocabulary and skills that could really enrich the normal scheme of work.
Yeah, I massively agree. I mean, Serena is my sister, so it's great to have myself as a drama and her as art. And we've all discussed, we've all said it, that the only time we've seen our curriculums cross is extra curriculum activities. And it's not that the departments themselves, I would say, the teachers aren't getting along, for example, because the relationships I've seen in both my CP1 and my CP2 in those departments is that they all love each other. They get along fantastic. It's just the fear of not being a specialist in something and trying to bring that into what is your, I guess, your baby, your comfort zone. And like you were saying, Serena, I think it's just about giving those skills, those tools to the teachers, just so we can kind of stand up and give it a try. At first, I'm pretty sure it's going to feel shoehorned in. It's not what we're used to. It's not comfortable. But that's the whole point. We've kind of got to take that leap, shoehorn it in, I guess, to start with, so then it can flow a little bit easier as we go. At the end of it, we are all expressive people. So I would definitely, even though I can't paint to save my life, I would definitely give it a go because of all the skills and tips that you've taught me as well.
Yeah. And actually, to pull back on that a little bit, thinking about our poor colleagues out in schools who are very, very short of time with this stuff, I think you've all pointed out a really important thing here, which is that we all tend to be subject specialists. I mean, okay, you know, some drama people are happy doing a little bit of music. Some music people are happy doing a little bit of drama. Basically, we see ourselves very often as subject specialists. And I think we almost were guilty here on the PGCE of just assuming that we all had a good story to tell about our own subject and knew what it was for and what it was about. But actually this year, we've backpedaled all the way to spending our first bit of time getting our story straight about our own subjects. What we then did is we asked you to kind of explain that to one another who may have actually dropped some of these arts at 14 at school. You may not have done it since you were 14. So I suppose what was really interesting was watching you all tell that story about what your art is, what it isn't, what it's for, what's important. What surprises did you all get from other people in the group about an art form that you were perhaps not so familiar with, or maybe you thought you were and then you got some surprises? What did you learn about things from outside your own subjects?
I think we talked about this, if it's okay for me to start.
We talked about
this with, I'm going to give an honourable mention to Jess. Unfortunately, she can't be here, she's not very well. But she explained to us that in art you use tools like surgery tools, tiny little intricate tools that I had no idea. I didn't really fathom that you have to go to that level of skill and detail. Drama, a lot of people can see it as just being big and loud. But of course, there are those really nice, small kind of quiet moments within it. And I think looking closely at the artistry that is making art with those skills, with those tools, you could really create something magical from that as a scheme of work. I guess our only worry was with, like I said to you, April, with using music, for example, as a stimulus. Are we giving it any kind of justice? There's not the full context there if we're just saying, hey, let's use this one piece of music and then create from that. We're not doing justice, I guess, to music in that sense. But yeah, the skills definitely in art with the tools.
Yeah. I think like going off that with the tools, we like kind of talked about in our group about how it's like tools are kind of similar to instruments. Like they would be like called like your instruments that you would use to create your art. And obviously like in music, we have like our glockenspiels and our different instruments that we use, musical instruments, to create our art. And like the difference is maybe like you can see your art sometimes depending on the art you're doing. And like we are a lot more hearing of the art that we're creating as well. So some differences. But I also thought it was very interesting, like the similarities, because I went into it knowing quite a bit about drama because I'd taken drama in secondary quite a bit, but I hadn't taken art in secondary. So I was very interested to see the similarities that music and art actually did have, and music and drama and art all did have. And I thought that was very interesting with like instruments and like texture, and how like texture is kind of similar, but it's like we have the similar things, but we do it in different ways. So I thought that was very interesting.
We actually did an activity in university where we actually had, I remember it quite vividly, we had like three bubbles and we all found words that we all use in our subject specialisms. And I didn't realise how many of these words can be suited for art, for music, for drama. For example, one that will stick with me is tone.
Tone, I was thinking that.
Tone, yeah. Definitely. Because you use tone a lot in art, in music. If you'd like to explain like how, that'd be brilliant.
Yeah, because of course we're talking about tone, we talk about our voice, aren't we?
Yeah, absolutely.
And then what's tone for you, for both of you?
So in art, tone, it could be like the strength or weakness of a colour, like that value that you add to it visually.
And in music, like tone is like the same, like with singing and voice, the tone of your voice, or like the tone of your instrument as well, like how does it sound? It's kind of similar that way.
Just links.
It does all just link. And it's just finding how do we do this in schools without forcing it? Mm-hmm. Because we've had subject seminars where we have discussions about this, and something that I talk with you a lot, Emma, is not forcing things, not doing something in a lesson just to tick a box, because then, in my opinion, it's not truthful, and it is simply just ticking a box, and it just takes
away the value, I would say.
Yeah, it takes away the value, definitely.
Yeah, I think, like, we have to, like, search for ways that adds to that value, like, definitely what you're saying. Like, I know for my CP1 and sometimes in my CP2 as I teach it, we talk a lot about, like, when we talk about jazz, we obviously introduce improvisation a lot of the time because it's very, like, similar, the same kind of definition of it. So I always try to say, like, oh, in drama, you do this. It starts with an I. It's creating something on the spot. And then the kids are able to kind of connect that and understand it in that sense, because I think – I don't know if, like, maybe they're just more used to hearing improvisation in a drama context. And so as I introduce it into a jazz context, they're able to draw upon that. So I think that's, like, one way we can use to benefit. But it's, like, finding more ways than just that. Because we have all these words. But that's, like, my go-to one I think of. But there should be more, especially, I think, with art as well, like, connecting that in.
Yeah, but I find that really interesting as well. And the other thing I keep going back to is also the fact that music have a completely different language that you use, you know. Chloe and I know we found it really interesting getting to talk to you about that, April. In drama, I would say we have different forms of language, you know, like with our Shakespearean language and things like that. And then again, I guess even with art, you have different ways. Because I mean, the things that you draw as well, Serena, the, is it stippling? And then all the different layers of the shading, etc., that you put on. It's all layering. It is all layering. But yeah, I absolutely agree. I just think that the fact that you have a whole other language that you guys have to learn is super interesting to me.
So a big part of our philosophy around this work is sort of giving you the opportunity to come at this with a sense of respect for the other disciplines. You've had lots of experiences on the programme so far. You know, you're at the beginning of your journey. But do you get a sense at this moment in time, and you sort of alluded to it a little bit in some of your previous answers, but the things that are working when we're bringing the expressive arts disciplines together, and maybe the things that aren't working so well, that as a profession, we need time and maybe professional learning, more support to actually be able to make this work in a meaningful way. What are your thoughts on that?
I think space is probably one that could be very difficult, as well as, like, if you're going to combine all these different things, you need space, you need materials. Like, the materials we use in music is going to be very different from materials we use in art, maybe the things that we need in from drama. And so in order to bring those materials in, we'll need, like, there's a lot of, like, money that needs to go, I think, into that. But then also having the space to have, like, an art space within a room that's also needed for drama, that's also for music. Because I think all of our rooms are set up very differently and very different from what the normal maybe classroom setup would look like as well.
Yeah, I think we'd also need time. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a huge thing that obviously teachers, educators, we're all running out of constantly. So along with money, a big part would be time. A big part is also just not being precious about your subject, about your speciality. Like we said, we need to be open to embracing and learning different things, and also just being open to the fact that you're going to fail at some of those things. That's a huge part about drama is falling over and standing back up again and continuing. So I think it's just being open to understanding that, no, I'm not going to be the perfect art teacher, but if doing art is going to progress my students further, then that's the step that I would rather take, even if it's going to bring me out of my comfort zone. Is that not ultimately what we're trying to do?
I think we have that luxury as student teachers, where we do have the ability to experiment in a way. Definitely now that we're further along in the journey, if you will, we have the ability, and again the luxury, to try and implement these changes ourselves and try and see how we personally would go about it, or even assist our schools now to help them go about it themselves. And we can make mistakes, and I'm not saying that teachers can't make mistakes, but they obviously have more pressure Kind of, because, I mean, my current senior mentor, they've been teaching for 18 years. So to go from just teaching drama solidly to now going into expressive arts, it's a massive pressure. Whereas we're quite new to this, so we do have the ability to chop and change what we can do. For example, I taught a little bit of art the other day, and I can't believe I said that because I can't draw to save my life. Yeah. But I kind of, I say use my drama brain, and I made it more of like a collaborative exercise, and we created something in the end. But to me, I still was thinking, I'm teaching drama right now, but just for art, if that makes sense. Like, I was going to do this, but people can't see me. But
for a different medium.
For a different medium, definitely, yeah.
Something interesting that I'm picking up on here that many of you are saying is about being able to practice the art form or the art discipline that you teach. Do you believe that in order to be a really great drama, art, music teacher, you also need to be a great musician, artist, actor, performer, director? Or do you feel that your art pedagogy is an art form all of its own?
So I think I have something to say on this, because a lot of, even at this kind of table, I've heard people saying, like, you know, I can't draw. So it's not about being able to draw, but there are a certain, there are some rules, which I love teaching people. There are just, drawing is recognizing shapes. If you can see a straight line, you know, challenging your brain, okay, what angle is it going at? So that goes into maths, and then just reproducing that. So there, you know, I could teach you all how to teach someone to draw. Because I could tell you what things to look for that you wouldn't be able to forget. Because once you see it, once you crack how to see something and translate it onto paper, you can't undo that skill. You'll start seeing squares and shapes and circles everywhere under everything. Because we're all made up of these different shapes. So I think, like, not worrying about, so maybe I couldn't play. If I picked up a guitar, you could teach me the notes. And it might not sound great, but if I can perform those notes and I've got my form correct, then I could teach someone. And maybe it sounds better with them. And also, there are art students I meet that are, like, young prodigies. Like, my specialism is sculpture. So I can draw, I can paint, but I'm not going to be the best painter in the room. But that doesn't matter, because I've got the experience to teach them the skills, and we could share our experiences. Like, Tiana's already picking up experience from me, because living alongside each other, an actor and an artist in the same house, you know, we pick up each other's skills. So I think jump into it feet first, mm-hmm. You know, speak to each other. But if we share knowledge, I reckon we could all definitely, even if we only started, say, key stage three at first, and then a GCSE is more like you need a specialist to be handling their exams. Yeah. That's fair. But I do believe that confidently we could all teach Key Stage 3. We could do that.
Yeah, I really agree with that. Like, I think it's our job as teachers to always be learning, even if it's just within our specialism. Like, obviously, I don't know every fingering to every instrument, but as I learn that, I'm able to better teach my students, I think it has to do. Whether, like, I'd much rather be a teacher that struggled with my subject and learned how to learn it, instead of being someone that's naturally a little bit more adept at it and not having that learning process, because then I think I'm less able to help my students as much, because I don't know what that learning process looks like, how to build that endurance, and then how to do that within my students. And I think that's so right about, like, we can expand on our own subject, but also other subjects. And, like, as a teacher, I don't think we should ask our students to be able to learn something that we haven't learned ourselves, you know, or that we can't do ourselves. So as I think it would be a huge benefit, like, if I were to learn more about drama or more about art and teaching certain things, well, that's still really fresh. So in a way, I think that's, like, really beneficial to the student, like, oh, I just learned this, or, oh, we're learning this together. Let's discover together. And I think that could be way more beneficial than being, like, a subject specialist and being like, okay, well, you know, this is what it is, or I learned this ages ago and now I can't, like,
it's creating that collaborative environment as well, definitely. Mm-hmm. And something as well we're quite lucky about is that even though, for example, we're drama specialists, we come from different backgrounds. So my background is contemporary theatre, whereas you have media as well.
Yeah.
And I find that so interesting, because, again, I've learned so much from you just by having conversations, you know.
World. Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It's an interesting question then. With your subject specialist hats on, you've obviously had the opportunity to learn from each other, and I can tell from all the things you're saying how much fun it's been to learn about the other subjects. some of the stuff you hear coming out of some schools, I mean, let's say, for example, a very small primary school might be trying to do all the expressive arts. They may not have a specialist in one of our subjects on the staff just because it's a small school, hasn't got many people. We're also seeing some quite scary early reports coming out about recruitment to secondary, where some head teachers are saying they've now given up putting out for certain specialist job adverts because they're not getting any applicants. And so they're just trying to fill those slots internally. So it's lovely if you've got a specialist around you who can really give you the inside track. But if you're in a school and you don't have access to that and you're frightened that you might not get off on the right foot with a subject, you might have the wrong idea about it. You might have a misconception. So I'm going to do the opposite of what Tiana suggested. I'm going to let you be precious for a moment about your subjects. What would you not want somebody to do or think about what your subject is? What misconceptions would you like to bust as a public service right
Drama
now?
Drama is not just running around being
Thank
silly.
Thank
okay?
you, Tiana. Thank you.
You know, there is meaning behind it. That's devising, Thank that's you. Coming up, that's creating, that's being collaborative. We're not just running around being silly. I mean, some of the time we are, but not all of the time.
So one of the first conversations I had when I started uni here is that someone came up to me and I was like, "Oh, I'm going to teach drama," and I was like, you know, bright eyed, you know. And they said, "Oh, you're just going to teach freeze frames," and that filled me with so much anger because I'm so passionate about this subject.
Yeah.
And it was just like, how can you say that? Because yeah, we do teach freeze frames.
We do.
But it's so much more than that. And I remember I was saying in my interview, drama helped me in high school with so much, with my literacy, with me as a person, with my confidence, and my English grades actually skyrocketed because I enjoyed drama so much. And we were doing Shakespeare, funnily enough, that when we did Shakespeare in English, I could put my actor brain on or put my drama hat on, and I could then adhere to the questions as a drama student and get the marks as a result. And It's such a misconception that, you know, drama is an easy subject to take. And I was speaking to my senior mentor in my CP2 school. That's a lot to say. CP2 school, that they still have people taking drama because they think it's the easy way out. And then half of them drop and change these subject options because then they panic.
Because it's a big shock.
Because it's a big shock to the system how different they think.
Yeah, that it isn't just Definitely. Standing in a room being a tree for
Exactly.
a few hours.
Absolutely. The floodgates are open.
Mm-hmm. You've been listening to Emma and Tom do therapy with their students.
The passion just erupted there.
What about the other side of the table?
So for art, it isn't drawing all the time. I think that's the same kind of, we all get this misconception. People assume that because our subjects are practical, it's all fun all the time, it's all creating. But there's quite a lot of heavy writing within art and pulling apart what you're seeing, critically evaluating, creating links, like real world links, contextualizing everything that you're seeing, and then kind of creating responses. But we don't just throw every color on the page, okay? We really don't like that, okay? Unless it's meant to be a rainbow, we don't want every single color. Okay.
Yeah, I would say for music, it would probably be the idea of like, oh, I have to learn all these notes and what they mean first before I can actually touch an instrument or something like that. I don't know if you would agree, Tom.
The blobs and sticks on a page thing.
Yeah, the blobs and sticks on a page before I go into that. And I think that's not true. I think we can teach a lot of times like sound to symbol and teaching that way and getting kids playing and engaged in the music. And I think also it's not that you need to be super proficient in piano when you come in, and it's not just all pianos. And I think there's so many different avenues you can go down with music, and some people think it's just one avenue or one thing, but we can explore all types of music in different ways. And I think that's something that not a lot of people know.
Something that came up in that interplacement fortnight when you were talking about our disciplines coming together, and it was mentioned at the start of this episode that a common time and place when we come together is in the school production, okay? Whether we like it or not, you know, that is happening regularly, and, you know, far be it from me to say that it shouldn't be, because there's a lot of good that comes from the school production. But I got the sense that
you got a bit of a bee in your bonnet about how that happens and how some of the arts disciplines can be perceived of by pupils experiencing the school production. So what did you discuss around that? And I know you had ideas about how it could be more powerful and meaningful. And, you know, if that is a really common thing that we know is happening in most schools, then maybe that's a great place to start. So what did you have a bee in your bonnet about and how could you make it better?
I wouldn't say it was just students that had that vision on it. It's actually teachers as well, because we all actually got together and discussed our scheme of work if we were going to do extra curriculum. We're just frustrated at the fact that it's always a musical at the end of the year, that the loudest, most boisterous students get the leading role. The art students are used to create the set, and then that's it. They're done right at the beginning. Then we've got our music, usually maybe sometimes in the, what's the orchestra pit?
Yeah.
Yeah, where we don't actually get to see you. I mean, we hear you, but you don't get that like kind of shining star moment. And then, unfortunately, Chloe, it's us, the drama kids, are like, woohoo, yeah. we are front and center, yeah, stage. And we really didn't like that division, even if it is all extracurriculum and it is all of them coming together. It's putting drama on a pedestal and then I guess having art and music just as
supporting
a backup.
Them kind of, yeah.
Yeah, and we were discussing how could we create a scheme of work, maybe for older years, where they would devise it themselves or compose it or create it, but it not be just an extra curriculum. If it actually was their scheme of work, we discussed maybe having the musicians on the stage with the actors in that moment, or maybe having the art students actually physically painting the back set, maybe with the media students and filming it as it's going live. So we're seeing that art develop in the moment as well. April mentioned, I think, if you took the music out of that performance, what's left? How does it feel? Is there any emptiness then without that specific expressive arts there? And then if we add them back in, maybe take out the actors, just to show the importance that really with one, we can't hold up the other. And without that, we're all just going to crumble and fall. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's the scheme that we were talking about, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I like that we talked about how there's so many ways we can combine the words that we talked about as well. Like things like, contention or something like that we talked about, and how like, well, that we can have that in music with two opposing sides in music, and we can show that musically. We can show that in drama with maybe like stage combat, fighting and things. Right. We can show that in art, having two different views of the same, drawing the same picture, the same portrait.
And the contrast between.
Exactly. And so we had, the contrast, that's what I'm thinking of. So the contrast exists in all three arts, and how can we put that into productions? And so like we talked about having on stage, maybe having two violins going at it or something, having that contrasting pieces together, having two drama students maybe like acting that out, and then having the art be drawn on stage, live art happening. And that way we have like that celebration of all those three different arts on the stage and being seen and being appreciated for what they are.
Yeah, getting that moment to kind of shine.
Mm-hmm. I think it would be interesting if you were to break down the performance afterwards and kind of do like a behind the scenes, because I mean, young people these days are able to watch behind the scenes on literally everything, all access on their phone. So you could break down the performance and have, you know, these are the parts of music that were played, these are samples, you can interact with the musicians, these are some of the actors, they're going to talk about the different things that they've experienced. You could have certain props from the set design, so maybe, you know, they're physically making these little sculptures and textured walls and things, have them out and get like everybody in the school to kind of take a look at the different arts, music and drama, kind of just picking apart what they've just done, because we all do something so different, but the saying, you know, taking away the set, it would look really odd for the musicians if they disappeared. So I think that could be interesting.
I think too, we talked a little bit about doing a video of that, like as it's happening and showing it after like the production is done, or like showing it during the production even, just to give those little highlighted parts. But then we also talked about doing like as a part of the scheme of work, if we did it as like a classroom kind of idea, to do kind of a round, so each student or a group of students would get a chance to try what music would be like in a production, to try what drama would be like in that production, to do a little bit of art for that production. And that way each of them kind of gain a little bit of an appreciation of what each of those roles are within that work.
Yeah, and each time discussing, obviously, if it adds or if it takes away, because we're not going to say that it's always going to work really nicely together, but just discussing that with the students, you know, does it work? Does it not work? But yeah, I thought it was really fun.
It is all about experimenting at the end of the day. And I think definitely
there's a misconception sometimes in drama that everyone who takes it wants to be actors.
Yeah.
And I think that with, I'm speaking from a drama perspective, if we have like these drama students go into art lessons or collaborate with art or collaborate with music, it would be really nice for them to experiment in what they want to do, if they want to go into drama, if they want to become a stage manager, if they want to even create props, create costume, look into special effects. It would be quite nice to for them to experiment in not just acting.
Being the performer, because we discussed that not everybody wants to be
definitely
on the stage. That's definitely what we said, videoing the whole thing, mm-hmm. Bringing in that media, that digital side as well, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's so true. And we talked about, like, for music, like, we could have performers, like, doing the music on the stage, or we could also have students that compose the music that we're playing. Like, I think we talked a little bit about having a completely, like, student-run kind of production, I would say, yeah. Like, yeah. Where art made everything. Like, all the sets, they made the props, they made everything. Music created the music, composed the music, played the music, chose music, you know, maybe to have, like, a background, like, studio kind of recording, I guess, in it. Like, they would choose that, and, like, having the different parts of that, like, combined.
That's really interesting ideas, because when you were talking about school productions earlier, I must admit there was part of me thinking something doesn't quite work for me with that, but I couldn't put my finger on what it was. And I think you've put your finger on it, which is just doing the school production, as we all know, as teachers of the expressive arts, it's very skewed towards performance or kind of creating a thing. It's very teacher led. It's very much focused on the product and not the process. So you open up that kind of fixture of our life, that kind of school production, into a much bigger, more exploring kind of learning experience.
Yeah, because we discussed as well in each of our specialists that it's never finished. The work that we create, the art that we make, it's never, ever a finished product. So like you've just said, them focusing within these extracurriculum shows, it's always what will everyone see at the end. I think our whole purpose was ours is devising, yours is composing, yours is creating. Following, having the students really lead that path. What is it that they want to create? What is it they want to do? I think I'm pretty big on pupil voice and allowing them to choose, obviously with direction from us as their teachers, what it is that they're actually interested in exploring. And and like you said, it doesn't have to always be the actor. They, with my media side, maybe they want to be a live documenter, so they're just going to be filming the entire thing all the way through. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but giving them that freedom to do that. Mm-hmm. That's what I'd like to do.
Yeah, and I also think it really cracks open that stereotype that art is easy.
Yeah.
Because people are so used to just seeing that final product, just seeing, you know, they don't see the work behind it, because obviously, like, what they see is what they know, I think. Yeah. And so, like, as we do this production, as we show them what we do behind the scenes, I think it creates a lot more of an appreciation of arts, and it tears down, like, this is where we started. This is all the effort we had to do so that you could be entertained at this moment. But, you know, it didn't just happen.
Yeah, because where we start and where we finish, if we finish, like I've said, it can continue.
Right.
Just two completely different worlds, you know.
And I suppose something that combines this all is that there are certain styles, forms associated with our respective art forms and disciplines that can feel a little bit inaccessible if we're not experienced in, or I'm saying in air quotation marks, cultured in those particular arts disciplines, and can seem really inaccessible. But I wonder if we get an insight into the process, we get a look behind the curtain at the steps that were taken to come to that final sort of product, as it were.
Yeah.
And that could maybe be a good thing in sort of breaking down that barrier of, I don't know how to respond to this. I don't know what I'm supposed to be feeling, thinking.
To make it more approachable. I'm currently in my CP2, I'm going to be teaching physical theatre. And at first I was like, oh, I personally really dislike physical theatre just from experience, you know, within college, etc. And I was like, oh no, I can't do this. And I had to kind of sit myself down and say, Tiana, this isn't about whether you like or dislike something, or if you're afraid to do something. This is what they have to learn. This is part of their curriculum, and this is new to them. So if you go in there with an attitude that this is going to be awful, this is going to be horrible, that's the exact attitude that they're going to receive from you. If I walk in and say, this is going to be so fun, even if inside I'm thinking, if I go in there smiling, how fun is this going to to be. I will enjoy it myself. And I did a soundscape with them, and I was really stressing about the fact that I'm going to have to do this. And it's a little bit of, there's a bit of music in there. And I'm like, I'm not a singer. This is going to go really bad. But I went in there super energetic, super high energy, had the boys do like the humming and the clapping and the stomping. And it really came together. And it's just about saying, it's not about me, the teacher, in this moment. It's about what are they going to take? What are they going to learn? What are they going to remember from this? And like I've said a million times more, it's about trying, it's really hard, but try not to be afraid to fail. Sometimes failing, when you can look back at it, it's actually the best thing that could have happened. And just being open to reflect on that and saying, okay, that one didn't work. What can we try? Speaking to the other people within your department, even if you don't have the specialists, I mean, go online. There are people, go onto YouTube, have a look. We've got all these different resources at our fingertips. I don't know how to play a piano, but I'm sure if I looked online and I needed to teach just a few keys, I could pick it up and pass it on. And that might ignite a passion in a student that they can then carry on further for themselves. Mm-hmm. So it's just trying to take ourselves out as the lead person and just say, okay, what do they need? What do the students need?
What's been really nice hearing about this is how much fun you've obviously had kind of getting the time and space to chew this stuff over and try these things out. And it is actually paying dividends out in school that you are trying things out. Thinking about our school colleagues again, because I've always got them in the back of my mind, very short of time, very high pressure. Anecdotally, I think we know that people are quite interested in doing this stuff. They're not against the idea, but they're quite short of time and they need to know where to jump off. So having had the luxury of I think we spent about a week on it, didn't we, working on this, if you were asked by your department, right, we've got a bit of time coming up next week, what should we start with, what should we do first before we do anything else so we get off on the right foot, what would it be?
I would say for my advice would be get your art, drama and music teachers in the same room. Get them to know each other. You know, let's start a group where we can talk and find out where everyone's at, you know, more about each other so we can start the path right and collaborate going forward.
And I think, too, it's starting small scale. Like, right now we have all these ideas very big. When you say the word production, you know, it's a bit scary. Like, oh, it's so big and everything. But start with small things, small skits, like, not very long. Like, see what you can do, you know. And I think, too, what you said was very important. Get the teachers all together, but also get the students together. Okay, today we're going to go to a field trip to art. You know, take a class to art and do something collaborative with art. Okay, now we're going to go to drama and do something collaborative with drama. Start, like, little. Start small. Because I think, like, if you just start, okay, production, like, and get everyone together, it's going to be a little bit of chaos.
You're just going to overwhelm them and, mm-hmm. and I guess put them off in that moment if you're just mm-hmm. like, do everything now,
yeah.
which we know we can't. But absolutely starting off small, why don't we try and be a little bit more expressive, get all of the humanities together and see if they can collaborate together, get all of the expressive arts together and see if we can collaborate. We know as creative people, if you put us in a room for 20 minutes, we're going to talk and we're going to come up with some amazing ideas. And yeah, they're going to go probably a little bit big and a little bit crazy, but that's where we can really just narrow it down and start from the bottom. And if it is with music, explaining how important it is to know an instrument or learn an instrument or the pathways that it can take you to know a little bit of an instrument. And then just being open to just giving it a try, learning a few keys on a piano. You know, I don't know. I never got to do that, but I would have loved to have done it.
I would say as well, observe as much as you can.
Yeah.
Because obviously I understand time is of the essence. Teachers do not have much time, but if they can, definitely observe lessons in expressive arts. Because in my CP2, I have the luxury of going into music and observing music. And although I don't play an instrument personally, I find it extremely interesting how one teacher teaches, for example, music, and then the next lesson they could be teaching drama and they teach it completely different ways, but there's still links. And maybe if they observe, they can find those links and then start small with a small project, find those links, and then slowly create something beautiful, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Jess, when she was talking in a group, fortunately, like we said, she couldn't be here today, but we talked about how we could do a project where, like, art drew something from what the music was created. So, like, bringing students into a music students into an art classroom and performing something, and then art creates something off of what they're hearing. I thought that was very interesting. Like, I think there's all these little ways that we're not completely aware of because we don't talk, because we need to be in those rooms together talking. But, like, hey, what, that's, like, one lesson that you could do just as, like, an intro, or a couple lessons over a few times. Just, like, what is that like? What does that look like?
But yeah. I think it would be a really fun experiment if you asked teachers to do a sort of presentation or a little bit of a performance, just to kind of put them on the spot. You know, you have an hour, go off with your expressive arts or your AOLEs, go off with those groups, and then come back. And, you know, it could be maybe the music people are playing an instrument and we're all singing along, and the art people are all singing along as well with them. But it could be something completely different. You don't know. That's the fun of devising. That's the fun of having creative people come together, because you don't know what you're going to get. And it could start off, like we said, as something really small, really simple. It could just be a little song that we're all doing together. It could be a magical masterpiece that we've all created or sculpted together. I don't know. But it's just about giving them even just an hour of time to create something and show it. Because it doesn't need to be perfect. That's the point. We don't have to be precious of our work, because it's going to change. Yeah. And that's the fun in it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you all for sharing those ideas, those insights. I think today's conversation has been a timely reminder of how important it is to listen to the views of novices coming into the profession who are excited and enthused and coming in with fresh ideas about what we're trying to do in the curriculum in Wales. I'm certainly feeling more optimistic having listened to you all. So we've got some short slots just to end this episode. I think that one of them is one that we perhaps have shared in the past, but it's worth mentioning again. This comes from the work of Barbara, who actually is writing, or was writing in this particular source, about science and religion encounters, and the way that you might describe, or one might describe, the ways in which those two subjects could come together. They could be described as being indifferent to one another, or being in conflict. And these categories, when we go through them, we apply them to our own context in the curriculum for Wales, could be quite useful for schools who are just starting to reflect on the way they're working, the way they're curriculum designing together, and the way that their subjects are coming together within the expressive arts. So we've got indifference or conflict, and this is where schools or teachers may not see the value of working with other subjects. They may not be interested in exploring this aspect of the curriculum for Wales for one reason or another. Departments maybe don't work together at all for whatever reason. There may be little respect or value for other disciplines within the AOLE, or it might just be indifference. Independence is the next one. So AOLE disciplines, like our expressive arts disciplines, are strangers which coexist, possibly even within the same department or faculty. But teaching and learning is still taking place separately in a disciplinary setting. Subjects might be in dialogue. This is the next category. This is where teachers in the AOLE may be considering shared topics, shared themes. They might be looking for common concepts, knowledge, skills, pedagogies within the disciplines, either as a precursor to cross-curricular planning, or to simply get a better understanding and sense of respect for each other's discipline, which you talked about a lot in this episode. The next one is collaboration. So this is where teachers within AOLEs are working closely on curriculum planning. They may also be collaborating with a view to teach another discipline within the AOLE. And there is more extensive and systematic kind of partnership between the disciplines. And then the final category from Barbara is integration. And this is where multiple disciplines are coexisting and being taught in the same space and time. And of course, I should probably have said first that I've adapted what Barbara uses, the words he uses to describe those categories, to help them sort of be applicable to our own context. So it might be worth thinking about those, thinking about what's going on in your school, thinking about where you want to be and how you're going to move towards that particular state of play within your faculty or department or expressive arts AOLE. And then we've got something to try, which actually, Chloe, you alluded to earlier on with the three bubbles.
Yes. Our magic three bubbles. Yeah, I think I was thinking as well, actually, a bonus something to try from what you just said there is if you're lucky enough to have a student teacher in your department, get some information out of them, get some ideas out of them, because they are such a good source of that. But if you don't, if you're not lucky enough to have a student teacher with you, you might want to know how we got the conversation started, which was with bubbles, or for our maths listeners, a Venn diagram, slightly altered Venn diagram. What we suggested that you do is find the words, the nuts and bolts words of your subject disciplines that you're looking to bring together. So in the case of Curriculum for Wales and the Expressive Arts, you dig into the designing your curriculum bit and you find the discipline specific words, which weirdly are buried really far down in the framework document. But if you dig far enough, you will find them. And then draw some circles or some bubbles for your different subjects which overlap, and start discussing where these different nuts and bolts words come in relation to other subjects. Are they unique to one subject? Do they have a potential connection? Do they mean similar things but not quite the same? Do they in fact mean exactly the same thing? I mean, we were discussing tempo or pace meaning something very similar in drama and music, for example. There's not a lot of difference in what those mean. You know, they just mean speed. But tone being the example that all of our lovely students came up with, that's a far more interesting one where you can start discussing the differences between the disciplines. So get those discipline-specific words out and start plotting how they relate to one another. Even if you're not actually listening inside Wales, if you're listening from outside Wales but you're looking to do something like this, you can probably find a list of elements or words related to the disciplines and have a go at this. And hopefully you'll find that you'll start having those really rich, interesting and, importantly, subject-specific conversations that start helping you understand one another's subjects.
We would like to say a big thank you to our student teachers who soon to be fully qualified teachers. That will come around quicker than we think.
Ever thought possible, yes.
Absolutely. So, Pob Luck, very good luck. Biggest of luck to all of you going forward. And to you listeners out there who are curriculum designers at the Chalk Face doing all of that good work, we hope this has been useful to you and we'll be back with you in 2 weeks' time.
You've been listening to Emma and Tom Talk Teaching, a podcast about all things education, presented by Emma O'Duha and Tom Breeze. We love teaching all our PGCE students in secondary art, drama and music, but a massive special thanks to Chloe Griffiths, Serena Hancock, Tiana Hancock and April Finch for giving up part of their half term to come and record this episode. Total legends. Podcast artwork is by Beth Blandford and the music is by Cameron Stewart. Technical support from Peter Lambin and the studio manager is Adrian Rapps. We'll be back in a fortnight with something else interesting. Until then, take care and enjoy teaching. Ching.